Good morning, everybody. Good to see all of your faces and or masks. And for those at home, we're glad you're joining us. I'm going to continue on talking a little bit today about our theme of being renewed day by day. And this particular verse, 2 Corinthians 4:16. Therefore, we do not lose heart, even though our outward man is perishing, yet the inward man is being renewed day by day. As we live in this world under the sun, we are going to, from the time we're born into this world, we seem like we're growing and growing, and everything's, you know, we get better and stronger and smarter, and then we kind of, you know, a peak, and then we start declining. But the reality is, from the time we are born into this world, we are beginning to die. It's a process that means our flesh only lasts so long. And we're all going to perish in the flesh. But God has given us a way to be renewed every day, regardless of what's happening to us in this world. And a lot of things can happen to us. This last year and the pandemic has certainly proven to us that many of the things that might happen to us are not within our control. And a lot of people suffered mentally in the last year because when things get out of our control, we actually suffer more anxiety and stress. And so people who have things like OCD, certain anxiety kind of conditions, all of those conditions typically are revolving around the idea of trying to gain some sort of control over their environment in order to calm their nerves, in order to calm anxiety and fear. And in the last year, many people there's nothing to do. There's no way to solve all of the problems of the world. The reality is there's never been any way to solve all the problems of the world for us. There's never been any real control by us. That's an illusion that very often we think we have. And from time to time, life resets itself and shows us that we're really not as much in control of things as we sometimes think. And because of that, I think it's really imperative that we learn this theme and how to be renewed in God every day. And one of the reasons we use this particular image, I know Jennifer created a number of different images. We thank her for that. But one of the reasons I like this one the most up here in front was because as the sun rises every day and you wake up, you have another opportunity to be renewed, much like as you slept through the night, your body was renewing. Your body, if you slept properly and you got enough REM sleep, you got enough deep sleep, and your body kind of reset itself. And it reset the mind, and it reset, you know, and it recuperated. In fact, when you don't get it, as you've noticed for the last, you know, month and a half, I haven't been up here. And that was because about a month and a half ago, I realized I was close to almost having like a nervous physical breakdown. I really hadn't had for at least a couple of months, had almost no REM sleep. I really hadn't had anybody besides myself taking care of my wife, and she doesn't sleep through the night. She's up and down all the time. And so until I really got help, I knew I was about ready to lose it. I knew exactly why. I knew I wasn't sleeping properly. I'd nap and get a little bit here and there. But as I tested my sleep every night, I got no REM sleep. And I was decaying rapidly. Dave actually said, the first week I got, like 3 or 4 weeks ago, I hired people to come and sit with Julie so I could sleep through the night. So I did it for 3 nights in a row when I felt like I was getting close to the very end of the rope. And Dave said the difference between like Sunday and Thursday that week was night and day difference between in me. And that's because of sleep. I was actually getting some sleep that allowed me to renew myself. And I was decaying so poorly in January and February because I wasn't able to do those things. Now, that's just the physical side. But the reality is God has given us the ability to go beyond just physical sleep, kind of renewing ourselves mentally each day. And that way, he gives us the ability to overcome the flesh so that even when things aren't going to go as we want and they're not going to end as we desired and we can't fix them, can we still find new hope every day? That's really the key. From God's perspective, he didn't take away all the troubles of this world. He didn't take away all the difficulties of life. What he gave us is a way to overcome it. Now that comes through him and through Christ. It doesn't come through our abilities and our power. It comes through that knowledge. And I'm going to give you a little side note here. Something that I really had noticed just in the last few months. If you are struggling in any kind of way, I mean, you know, it could be, as we're going to talk a little bit about today, a particular issue with David in Psalm 51, which had to do with his own sin. But it might be just circumstances of life feeling like you are just being overwhelmed, as I think the psalm I was thinking about, as we talked about yesterday, I believe is Psalm 42. Deep and the waters are overflowing me. And, you know, we talked yesterday in the men's breakfast about when Jesus calmed the storm, when all of these, number of them fishermen, all of his disciples are in the boat with him, thought they were going to die, and they go to him and say, "Hey, please, Lord, save us." And he's like, why are you guys worried about this? Why do you have such little faith? And then he calmed the storm, and they're just like, "Wow, I don't really understand who this guy is. He's much more powerful than I ever thought he was." But that image of that real storm that they thought they were in, and they thought they were going to die in that moment, is more symbolic for us, right? We sing songs like "Master, the Tempest is Raging" that describes this idea of life circumstances overwhelming us, and reality is God and Jesus can calm those storms too. He can help us overcome all of those life storms as well. And I realize in Psalm 40 through 51 deals constantly with the idea of being overwhelmed by things and needing God's help. And so if you just want a little section of scripture to go read because you're feeling overwhelmed by any kind of thing, from Psalm 40 to Psalm 51, you will find scriptures that that describe most likely your circumstances in some way. I don't know why that particular set is like that. I don't know if it was purposeful in the kind of collecting of psalms or not, but it's just something I just recently noticed. Obviously, probably because feeling that overwhelming sense of challenge and trials brought upon our life, you know, that we didn't have any control over. And you know, so our lives have changed in a lot of ways, you know, for myself, obviously for Julie and you know, for Janae, for us to some degree as well, though, you know, they still have their jobs and stuff. But Janae and I and Julie have especially been impacted by Julie's health. But it is not permanent. It is a temporary situation in life that we deal with. Now, the temporary might mean, at the end of temporary, sometimes we think, "Oh, it's just temporary, everything will be fine afterwards." You know, the end of temporary sometimes is death. That's the reality of life. That God promised people a lot of times that things were temporary, that this would just be a short time. But sometimes God's short time was longer than your lifespan. Right? That was true when he spoke to the church in the first century. Many of them were not going to live beyond the time of persecution. But he said it was temporary. It was just for a time. It was just for a season. But sometimes the season is longer than our life. And that's the reality of, that's the truth of living in this world. And so I want to kind of make some applications about restoring the man. We'll come back to this particular topic. And that is, one, I want to talk about the inner person a little bit. In Matthew 23 and 27, 28, when Jesus was talking to scribes and Pharisees, leaders within Israel at the time, and he kind of gave a woe to them. Now, it's kind of like the Yiddish term oy vey, is kind of like, it's just kind of, this is problem. He's not declaring a woe. He's saying this is, he's frustrated with their situation. He feels bad about their situation too. He doesn't desire, he died just as much for the scribes and Pharisees as he did anybody else. But he called them hypocrites. He said, you're hypocrites. You're like whitewashed tombs, which indeed appear beautiful outwardly, but inside are full of dead men's bones and all uncleanness. Now, by the way, tombs, we're not the caskets. These are those little buildings they make, right, of stone, and then they whitewash them, and they're all beautiful. And maybe you've seen some cemeteries like that where they have, especially if you go down to like New Orleans and things, their cemeteries are often, everybody's buried above ground because you can't really bury people in the ground. It's too wet. And so they build these little buildings, they build these little tombs in order to put the caskets in them above ground. And like Jesus, his tomb was hewn out of rock, a solid rock that some rich man had carved out for his family to be buried in. Tomb is actually the building where they would place boxes and put dead people in. And so on the outside, they were very, very ornate and beautiful, and especially the more money you had. But on the inside, just like when Jesus came 4 days after Lazarus died, and he's like, open it up, and people are like, no, you don't want to open that up. That's not going to smell very good. No, open it up. I got something planned for Lazarus. But they wouldn't normally have opened that 4 days after laying a dead body in there. They would wait some fairly long period of time before they would go in and they would collect the dead body and they would reduce it to just its bones, and then they would fold the bones into what's called an ossuary box. And they would put an ossuary box on a shelf that was built into the tomb. And so the idea of this little beautiful building to bury all the dead bodies, he's describing them that they're like that. Boy, that's just so beautiful, so ornate, so wonderful looking. But inside is like, that's pretty gross. That's pretty disgusting. And he says, you have all this uncleanness. He says, even so, you also outwardly appear righteous to men, but inside you're full of hypocrisy and lawlessness. They do a lot of things that were ungodly. They just didn't really let it known. Like much of us, most of us, to some degree, our sin is not something we try to publicize, right? We don't let everybody else know about it. We often know it's not good, it's not right, it's not healthy or profitable, but we're enticed by it, and we're drawn to it sometimes. But we try to look good. But we don't want to get into their problem of having us look good, sound good, but not actually changing the inside. And that's what this theme is really about. It's about renewing ourselves on the inward man. It's not about the outward man. The outward man's not going to be renewed. You can get all the surgeries you want on all kinds of body parts that don't work very well, and I can guarantee you, you are not going to ever be as good. Your knee will never be as good as it was originally, no matter how many surgeries you have on it. Your shoulder will never get better, no matter how many surgeries you get. It might help the moment, but it's never going to be like it was at one point. There's nothing we can do to stop the decay of the body. But the spirit does not have to decay. The spirit does not have to grow old and wither. Now we see sometimes older people where it seems like their spirit has withered along with their body. The book of Ecclesiastes, by the way, warns us about that. In Ecclesiastes 11 and 12, it says, you know, you really have to seek and find God when you're young before all the aches and pains come along. Because if you wait to try and find God when all the aches and pains and all the, you know, you can't sleep because your shoulder's killing you, or you can't sleep because your back is thrown out from sneezing or something. I mean, sounds funny, but it's true. Those who are old enough know those things are true. All the weird things that can happen to you just from coughing or sneezing when you get older that you would never think of when you were younger. But, you know, you need to find God before those days come, or the danger becomes your spirit begins to wither and die too. We called it in our family, so Julie and I had a number of family members who we called curmudgeons. That was our term for some older family members who had gotten, whose spirit wasn't very kind and gentle or loving. You know, their spirit seemed to have declined along with their physical health. And that doesn't have to happen. That's not required and necessary. But if we don't have God, which is the case of most of our family members who found themselves in that mental place, spiritual place, they really, you know, they thought everything was great, and then their body got older, and they lost hope, and they lost, you know, any kind of sense of life. And the truth is, all the life God has promised us is still ahead of us, no matter how well your body works or doesn't. All the promises are still there and can never be taken away from you. And so there's no reason for us to lose hope. In fact, we need to renew our hope. We need to renew our joy. We need to renew our life. We need to renew our spirit, the inner person, every day. Because the world will grind it down if we don't conquer the difficulties and the challenges that it puts upon us. The question is, how did these guys become like that? Well, one passage in Proverbs chapter 8, the first 9 chapters of the book of Proverbs, there are 2 characters that get talked about a lot. One is wisdom. And I say character because the character of wisdom is personified as a woman in those 9 chapters. There's another character, and that's the adulteress, the temptress. Now, this isn't, in those 9 chapters, it's not about women. It's about how the world and wisdom can attract or entice us in different ways. Wisdom shouts out loud to everybody to come to me, and lots of people don't want it. The adulteress goes and hides and sneaks around, and everybody kind of seeks out that in the dark corners. And so this is one of those passages where the wisdom is talking to people. And she is telling them, therefore, listen to me, my children. For blessed are those who keep my ways. So when she talks about my ways, she's talking about the ways of wisdom. Walking and doing those things that are wise. That is blessing. You will be blessed. And one of the translations for the term blessed here is actually be happy. Not just temporarily happy, but happy in a really deep sense. Joyful in things. He said, and so wisdom also says, hear instruction and be wise. Do not disdain it. And so in order to walk in wisdom's ways, we need to actually hear and listen to the instruction from wisdom and be wise and not to disdain it. Now, I'm going to give you an image here. For all of you who have children, you'll probably like it. All of you kids, you might want to listen for a second. Young people, you know, Bailey, for example, might not want to, you know, listen to this. When young people roll their eyes at older people trying to give them wisdom, you need to understand that young people are often disdaining your wisdom. That's what they're doing. They don't want to hear it. All of us have done it, by the way. Okay? So it isn't, everybody who's been young has always done it when you've been young. You know, at a certain age, we kind of think we know everything. 18-ish, give or take. We kind of know everything in the world until we kind of learn a little bit more. But that just happens, and people laugh because we all know it's true. We all have been there. We all thought we knew things, and then more life happened, and I've just been so unaware. And sometimes one of the reasons we don't like to listen to older people, now understand, my generation was like, don't listen to anybody over 30. And when I was in my teens, that sounded smart. It was stupid. But the reason people thought that back in the 60s, don't listen to anybody over 30, was because we looked at people in older generations and looked at all the terrible things they've done in the world. So they can't be wise. We came to those conclusions. But the truth is, a lot of their wisdom comes from the exact mistakes they made. A lot of wisdom doesn't come from having known everything and done everything right. A lot of wisdom comes from all the mistakes that have been made along the way. And so older people have wisdom to pass along, often because of their mistakes. But younger people don't want to listen to them oftentimes because they've seen them, especially your own kids, right? They know all your weaknesses. They know all your flaws. They know your, you know, temper and things like that at home. They know that you're not always as perfect as you might look like at church. And so they're like rolling their eyes. Oh, there's Dad talking on again. How long is this one going to be? Well, that's youth. By the way, Proverbs is written to youth, and this is written to young people to try and help them understand. Don't disdain listening to those that have wisdom. That's helpful for you. If you want to live a blessed, happy, joyful life, listen to those who have some wisdom. And don't look down upon it and think, oh, this is horrible. Blessed is the man who listens to me, watching daily at my gates, waiting at the posts of my doors. Whoever finds me finds life and obtains favor from the Lord. So if we hear it and we listen to it and we seek it out, wisdom, we find it, then we find life and we find favor. But then the other side of that is, wisdom says, he who sins against me wrongs his own soul. All those who hate me love death. Now, those who hate wisdom, who hate God's wisdom, they hate older people's wisdom from having lived in life, everybody who hates all that stuff, they don't say they love death. But that's the reality. Because the truth is, if you're 20 now and you look at everybody a generation above you and you're one of those people that talks, you know, like, oh, there's the boomer talking on again. If you're one of the thinks that way, if that concept has gotten into your brain and you think you don't listen to them because they don't, you know, just, they're all, you know, they don't understand anything. They don't know what the new world is like, what life is like, you know, between the two of us, young people and us, we're the only ones who have been your age and ours. But you usually think we don't remember well enough to remember those years. The truth is, for most older people, there is an age you still think you are. It might be in your 20s, it might be 30. There's still an age that when you look in the mirror, like, that's a way older person than I am. Because you don't forget all that stuff. You don't forget all the lessons. And so God urges us, by the way, to listen to those who are older. Urges those who are older to try and educate and pass on wisdom, by the way. But wisdom is something that God has given to us to benefit our life. And when we don't want it or find it, we hurt ourselves. It isn't God that we're hurting. It isn't other people that we're hurting. Understand, notice what he's saying. By not finding wisdom, not walking in wisdom, it's us who get hurt. We don't think about it a lot of times that way. We're like, wow, we're just hurting ourselves. Do you really want to go around hurting yourself? Anyway, this is how people fall. This is why people really fall. But how do you restore it? And I'm not going to read all of Psalm 51. Hopefully many of you know the psalm a little bit. This is a psalm. I give you a little bit of background. After David sinned with Bathsheba, I a while back did a lesson about the fall of David. This isn't a single incident. You know, a lot of times we think about falling, tripping and falling over something, and we're like, oh man, I really blew it. But the reality is, David didn't just really blow it with Bathsheba in 1 minute. David saw Bathsheba, wanted to have sex with Bathsheba, even though she's married and he's married. But the only reason all of that happened is because David didn't go out with his army that normally the kings did at that time. And so he already didn't do what is normally done. And then he's kind of doesn't have much to do. He can't sleep. He sees her. At that point, you'd think, well, okay. Does he want to reveal his adultery to lots of people? Because he couldn't go down to her house. He couldn't just like call to her. He had to actually use his own servants to go get her. So now people know about it. So he plans it. And then after having sex with her and getting her pregnant, he wants to hide it. And so he's like, well, let's get her husband to come back. And then, you know, he'll come back. He'll have a little short visit home from leave. And then maybe they'll think the child's his. Now, I don't know where Bathsheba is in this whole process, by the way. This whole system doesn't talk about Bathsheba. She doesn't talk about a lot of it. Apparently, she didn't tell her husband either. But he didn't go back to her. He felt like, I need to be with my, you know, the troops, my fellow soldiers. And so he kind of just camped out in David's palace. And David's like, oh, great. So then he has to send a letter in her husband's hand telling the commander, Joab, to have him killed, so we can cover it up and then take her as a wife. That didn't take a couple of moments. It didn't take a half hour. That entire process took months. The fall of David is not a single incident with Bathsheba. It is a whole series of choices that were completely unwise, that led to his sin, that led to his fall, that led to Nathan coming to him and telling him, listen, David, there's this guy who's just got immense, you know, sheep. He's got all this whole massive sheep, but he stole one sheep from his neighbor who only had one sheep whom he loved a lot. And David is like, well, we got to kill this guy. By the way, the death penalty is not and should not have been on the table for stealing somebody's sheep. But David wants to kill the guy who stole some guy's sheep. And then Nathan ultimately has to tell him, I'm talking about you. David, Psalm 51 is what David writes after all of that happened. And he tells Nathan, man, I have sinned horribly against God. And so that's what it is, and that's what's written. But I want to kind of focus on a couple of the points here in Psalm 51. I want to highlight a few things for you. I'm not going to read all of it, but a few things. Understand, as he talks about, only God can really cleanse us. Only God can really renew us. You and I can't do that for ourselves. We can't make ourselves brand new. We cannot make ourselves new again. But God can. And so any attempt to renew ourselves that doesn't include, like our sign on the back, the guy getting down on his knees and praying at the rising or setting sun, not sure which one that is, but anything that doesn't include us pouring out our heart to God is going to fall short. And only God can really cleanse me. And he said, have mercy on me, O God, according to your steadfast love, according to your abundant mercy. Blot out my transgressions, wash me thoroughly from my iniquity, and cleanse me from my sin. Now, all situations we get into are not because we sinned. Some things that cause us trouble, like Job, was all of Job's trouble because of his sin? No. Now, his friends all accused him of, they almost have happened because of some sin, but it wasn't. We know that. We're given the backstory to it by God. And a lot of people, sometimes, terrible things happen to them, not because of sin. But it still wears on us and it tears us down. You know, by the way, this passage in 2 Corinthians 4:6 is not talking about sin. It's talking about how life is tearing us down. About how we are being attacked. And how we are being hurt on a day-to-day basis. And so, he says, and from 3 through 6, my point in this part, where he says, for I know my transgressions, my sin is ever before me. Be honest to yourself about your problem. This is actually a really hard step, by the way. Feeling and being really honest inwardly with God, and how much you do that with others. But the tough part is an inward honesty. David obviously wasn't being honest inwardly for a fairly long time until he was confronted by somebody. Sometimes it takes somebody else to confront us for us to kind of wake up and go, yeah, oh wow, I should do something about that. But sometimes we just feel so overwhelmed, we don't know what to do. Job obviously felt that, didn't he? You know, I've taught Job a ton of times in my life, and I've never felt like I really understood it. But I have recently. I have felt, and I have found myself saying very similar things that Job said. Now, I wouldn't put my wife's bad health at the same category of trauma that Job faced. I mean, Job didn't lose his wife, even though she was really horrible to him, but he lost all of his kids. He lost all of his wealth in just a moment. He lost everything. And that didn't come back in a short, he didn't get restored in 6 months. He didn't get restored in a year's time. It took decades for much of that to be restored to him. There was no quick fix for all that happened to Job. But what he had describes the mourning that he goes through, the pain that he is feeling. For the first time in my life recently, have felt like I understand it from not just a knowledge sense, but from a feeling, an experience sense. And Job was honest. A lot of times we can kind of pretend that we're not feeling overwhelmed, that we're not feeling like I can't take it. And we kind of put on a good face at work or at church or at home or with other family members. It's not helpful. All of us need to be honest with whatever our problems are. Whatever we're enduring, whatever suffering we're going through, whether it's been caused by our own sin or been caused by others against us. We need to be open about it, to ourselves at least. And then we need to have it purged and washed. And he says, create, restore my inner man. That's actually from verse 7 through 12 what is pleaded for by David, asking God to purge him and wash him. Let me hear joy and gladness. I get that. I suspect for a period of time he wasn't joyful and he wasn't happy. This is what happens when people go through grief, and they talk about the end of grief is when you at some point feel like you can feel joy again like you used to before whatever the circumstance that caused grief. That's kind of the end of the result of the process of grieving. But during grieving, very rarely do you feel joy Do you feel happy like you did before? In the middle of it. You can't. It's not the same. Life has changed. But through the process, and if we heal well, we will hear joy and gladness again. And remembering that. And God has promised us that. Because he hasn't just promised us that he's going to renew us here and now. He's also promised us that elevating us to eternity is where we really get to hear the joy and experience the wiping away of all tears and the elevation of the beauty of what life is all about. That's what God's talking about to us. And he talks about restoring that for us and giving us peace and things. And then at the end of that, David says, you know, when this has happened, I'm going to teach and I'm going to sing and I'm going to speak and I'm going to praise God. Because God has done all these things for me. And he did do them for David. So David, even after all of that he did with Bathsheba and her husband, he was a man after God's own heart. Because he got to this point again, that he could talk about, sing about, speak about, and praise God. And then finally, in 16 through 19, God desires true sorrow in us. And then he will be pleased with the sacrifices of our outward man. He doesn't want us to do stuff like sacrifices that David talks about. It isn't things that we do outwardly that God is as concerned about as what we do inwardly. What do we do with our thoughts and our heart and our meditations? Do we at some point go, I can't fix this, I need you? Because as long as we try to fix it, God will probably let us try. And we will only, though, find the help when we finally humble ourselves enough to say, I can't fix this on my own. I can't be good enough to not be a sinner. I'm never going to be smart enough or blessed enough or speak well enough or do enough good works to ever undo all the terrible things I've done. But Lord, you have the ability to raise me up because of your graciousness, because of your loving kindness, because of your steadfast love, because of your commitment and desire to help us, your children. That's where we all have to get to truly be raised up. So we're going to end there. I appreciate everybody's time this morning. Went a little longer than I wanted, but I threw in a few extras for you along the way. As I always have it, I know you guys think I digress into all kinds of stuff. You don't even know how many things I leave out that I think about. I have so many thoughts. I'm kind of ADD up here with all my different thoughts about certain topics. But we're going to close out here with a song, and then we'll have, after the song, we'll sit down, we'll have some announcements. But we do always want to let everybody know that we want to help as much as we are able. God is of the source of all of our salvation, of all of our hope, but he has given us one another to care and comfort and love each other. And if you're here and you need anything, please reach out to us. You know, we're not gathering in front and things in at the moment, but let us know, call us, text us, email us, call us, any method to talk to one of us, the elders, the deacons, any member of the congregation. We as a congregation will do everything in our power to help anybody in need, whatever that need may be. If we're able to help you, please let us know how. We're going to go ahead and stand and sing here.